Hi there, everyone. Welcome to the Experiential Table Podcast. I'm Cynthia Simonian, your host and founder of Hidden Rhythm. I help food businesses of all sizes create engaging experiences, both online and offline, from virtual cooking classes to branded pop-ups. Experiences that bring people together over food are my jam. Now, today's episode is one that I've been really excited about for weeks now. I came across the Pastry Project on Instagram and immediately knew I wanted to learn more. The Pastry Project is a social enterprise that provides free baking and pastry training to individuals with barriers to education and jobs in the industry. If you're passionate about building a business that truly does social good, you'll want to keep on listening. In this show, I'm chatting with Emily Kim and Heather Hodge, the co-founders of the Pastry Project. We're going to talk about how they started, what it means to be a social enterprise, and so much more. We are so lucky to have both of them on the show today. Let's get started. Hi, Emily and Heather. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. All right, listeners, before we get into all the juicy details of the Pastry Project, I want to share some background info on Emily and Heather. And I have to mention, this is one of the first episodes we've had where we've had two guests on. So it's going to be a really fun conversation. And I really want you to get to know Emily and Heather separately. And you'll probably have to learn their voices as you listen too. So Emily finished her law degree in Washington, D.C. while clerking at the Federal Communications Commission. I'm pretty sure that's the first time I've mentioned the FCC on the show. That's where she discovered her love of policy and community impact work. Now, after moving back to her hometown of Seattle, Emily worked as a legislative aide at the Seattle City Council before joining Molly Moon's Homemade Ice Cream. There, she became their director of social impact. And now, in addition to being a co-founder, she's taken on the role of community impact director at the Pastry Project. Now, Heather's background is a little different. Well, it's actually very different. Heather graduated from the Culinary Institute of America for Baking and Pastry Arts. She spent time working as a personal chef, fine dining server, and many other positions in food before moving to Seattle and becoming the head baker at a Seattle bakery. Later, she became the director of culinary operations at Molly Moon's. And no surprise here, Heather is not only the co-founder, but also the culinary director at the Pastry Project. So before we dive into the Pastry Project, I'd love to ask you, Heather, I want to start with you. Could you paint a picture of Molly Moon's for our listeners? I know we're going to talk about the Pastry Project, but being from Seattle, I know that Molly Moon's is a thing, and I think it would help people understand your background as well as Emily's.
Yeah, absolutely. So I worked at Molly Moon's for almost 7 years, actually. And I actually had my last week there 2 weeks ago. And so I'm really in this major transitional phase right now, moving full time to the Pastry Project. And working at Molly Moon was a really incredible experience in the food industry because it is a very unique experience. It's not like working necessarily in a restaurant and not really like working in a bakery per se, but there's so many skills required to work in a position like that where you are making ice cream and you're making sauces and baked goods and stuff like that that goes into ice cream. And I actually started there as an ice cream maker. So the most entry-level position that we have there, and then worked my way up into the position that I held before I left. And it was really interesting spending all of that time at Molly Moon's and really transformative as well. You know, the company has both remain the same and then also change so much over time. The owner, Molly Moon, her vision is really incredible for the company. And some of the things that made it really amazing working there were basic human needs that were provided by the company, like 100% paid healthcare, providing a transit stipend, stuff like that, that just makes you feel cared for. And then over time, all of those benefits really grew into even more amazing things like family leave and leave for a new parent. And again, things just that made you feel really like you were in a stable job. So it's funny, to me, my biggest takeaway working in that company was less that I was working in a food company and more that I was working in a company that was trying to create good jobs for folks who live in the community.
Wow. So there's like a whole new level of of like the employee culture. And like you said, this focus on community that maybe people see when they walk in and get two scoops and a cone, maybe they don't. My experience as a consumer is that Molly Moon's, I remember when it, I don't know if it first opened or what, but it was years ago that I had my first scoop there. And I think what stood out the most was the wide selection of flavors and just the creativity around flavors. Can you help our listeners kind of get an idea as to like what those flavors are? Because it's not just plain vanilla, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely not just plain vanilla. In fact, we don't even serve vanilla anymore. We serve sweet cream. Really, at Molly Moon's, what we always tried to do was to create classic flavors done really, really well. Like the best cookies and cream ice cream you've ever had. So some of our most popular flavors are something like a really deep, rich, salty caramel. That's probably the one of the saltiest and most caramelly deep ice creams that you've had of that sort of flavor. Or our chocolate chip cookie dough that's actually an oatmeal chocolate chip cookie dough. So again, really just trying to make flavors that are delicious and approachable, but kind of the best that we can do with them.
Got it. Got it. And so you just recently left. And Emily, are you still at Molly Moon's or did you leave also?
So I am still there. I am there in a part-time capacity right now.
Okay. And I imagine that that's where you and Heather met.
Yes. Yep.
Awesome. And I have to just say it. So there's some noise in the background. You are probably in a kitchen, I'm going to guess.
Yes, we are actually sitting in our kitchen at the Pastry Project right now. So
perfect transition. Like I said, I discovered the Pastry Project on Instagram. And I think one of the first photos I saw was this beautiful space that you are now in. So I can kind of picture as I'm hearing like people, you know, open the fridge and do certain things in the background in my head. Like I feel like I'm there. So if you're listening, go to their Instagram, check it out. Because the photos are beautiful. And like I said, I feel like you get a sense of the space. So let's dive into it. So what is the Pastry Project? Do you want to start, Emily?
Sure. So the Pastry Project is a community kitchen space. We provide the kind of main basis of the Pastry Project is that we provide a free baking and pastry training program for individuals in our community that have barriers to opportunity, education, and employment. And so we offer a free training program and help find them jobs at our hiring partners all around Seattle.
Amazing. And the natural question, I'm sure one that you both probably get all the time is, how did you start it? How did you think of this? Being at Molly Moon's and seeing the focus that they have on community probably helped, but what really led you to a place of saying, we need to create this?
Yeah. So Heather talked a little bit about her job at Molly Moon's, and my job at Molly Moon's really interacted with hers during hiring season, where I worked with a lot of community partners to try to find placement for people that needed good jobs with good benefits for positions in the company. And it was a lot easier to find someone that met the right qualifications for a job in our front of house. It was a very entry-level scooper job. But for back of house ice cream makers, it was really tough because you did need a little bit of kitchen experience, at least to be able to start in a really busy ice cream kitchen during a summer. And so we just found it was really hard to be able to offer those jobs to people that might have barriers to opportunity. And we wanted to create a program that would give people just a little bit of experience and be able to help place them in those culinary positions like ice cream makers at Molly Moon.
Got it. And so just to confirm, people in Seattle do eat ice cream, right? Even though it can be cold and rainy most of the year. I think, isn't it one of the top cities for ice cream consumption, or am I just making that up?
I've definitely heard that. I think Molly said that a couple of times. I haven't looked it up, but yeah, it's really surprising. But
okay, so there is such a thing as being super busy as an ice cream shop in Seattle. I'm just painting the picture for people here who might be like, what are they talking about? But yes, people in Seattle do eat ice cream. Okay, so as you were working at Molly Moon's, you had this idea to create this program. Was the idea that it would, I guess, become something bigger than, you know, what had expected? I mean, or your expectations, I should say, around creating the Pastry Project? Was it just a side project or something that you were hoping to turn into something larger?
I think for a long time, Emily and I were both a mix of just really focused on getting the training program going because we saw the need for it. And then over time, that kind of merged into this vision of shooting for the stars and figuring out, how can we make this a program that's a sustainable social enterprise, and where do we want to take it? Do we want to go beyond Seattle one day? So we really started with a, let's get this training program done and see how it goes and see if we can help some folks. And then now we're definitely in the kind of dreaming and figuring out how we can shoot for the stars.
I love the dreaming phase. It's fun. It's fun. And it's something that you should enjoy. And just seeing the momentum that you both have, there's no reason why you can't have it in multiple cities. So I'm excited for what the future is for the Pastry Project. You mentioned social enterprise, and that is one of the topics I wanted to talk about in this show, because I frankly don't know a lot about it. And I actually made the mistake of calling the Pastry Project a nonprofit. And Emily was like, well, no, we're actually not a nonprofit. This is our model. So I'd love to learn more about what a social enterprise is and how it's different than a nonprofit.
Yeah. So a social enterprise is really a business whose core mission is a social impact focused mission. And so that is how we formed our social enterprise, with our basis for giving back in that free training program for individuals with barriers. And then we wanted it to be self-sustaining. So we really wanted to create a nonprofit-like program, but in a kind of bigger way, where we could have a business that sustained that nonprofit-like program all on its own. And so we actually formed a social purpose corporation, which is what you form in Washington State when you want to create something that is kind of officially a social enterprise. And yeah, so that is how we're formed. And our core mission is a social impact mission. And then we do still want to earn profits and be able to pay for that program through what we can earn through selling baked goods or teaching classes to the public and things like that.
Got it. Okay. And how did you become familiar with that? Is that something that you had seen in your role working in the city council, Emily? Or like, how did you even know that that was a thing?
So I kind of saw it at both nonprofits that I volunteered with and also at Molly Moons. So there are a number of nonprofits that really could be social enterprises that really do have arms of ways that they earn money, which is really interesting and innovative, and I feel like has been growing over the past few years. There are some in Seattle that we, you know, see that have cafes or, you know, host dinners and things like that. And then also at Molly Moons, Molly was kind of at the other end of that, where she really is a for-profit company, but does and isn't officially a social enterprise, but has a really, really strong social impact mission. So yeah, we've kind of seen these hybrids of both companies and nonprofits kind of doing a social enterprise thing. And we decided to kind of just officially incorporate as that social purpose corporation.
Got it. And you mentioned that the social purpose corporation, that is something that Washington State has, but it may or may not be in every state.
Yeah, it may or may not be in every state. It might be called something different in different states. I think some states call them, you know, public benefit corporations or things like that. But there are a lot of states that kind of have them. And really, it is just to incorporate into your articles of incorporation and formation, just that you really do have that social impact mission and that that is, you know, one of the core elements of your business.
I see. Okay. So now, as you think about your business, right? So the Pastry Project is a business. It actually, you know, has to generate revenue and you have to think about profitability and all of that. What are some of the ways that the Pastry Project brings in revenue to support the training program and the other things that you have in place?
Yeah. So we have kind of a lot of ways that we do this right now. And again, this is something that we're experimenting with a lot. The main ways that we bring in money is through our Goodie Box memberships. And that is a subscription where folks in the community sign up. It's $35 a month. And then once a month, they come in and pick up baked goods that are either baked by myself and Emily or some friends or family that have helped us out. And then when classes are in session, those are the days where students are focusing on high volume production. So they learn how to bake in high volume. And then that's a part of the goodie boxes. For example, our students, our next cohort starts next week. And some of their chocolate chip cookies are going to be in our next goodie box on the 12th of December. So that's one of the ways, and it's a very delicious way. And then we also have our pastry kit subscriptions. So that is where you get all of the ingredients to make some delicious pastries at home. And you get those ingredients once a month shipped to you anywhere in the country. This is one of the main things that we actually put as a part of our business plan was teaching classes. And with COVID, that has made a really big impact on this plan to create this space where folks could come in and take classes here, these interactive fun classes that are baking and pastry focused. And so we really had to pivot with that and focus on virtual classes. One of the ways that that is amazing for us is doing corporate and team building classes virtually online. And that's where a team signs up for a class and they have a private class with myself. And we teach them how to make something delicious like brown sugar Pop-Tarts or honey butter biscuits and jam. And then on top of that, we're continuing to experiment and figure out other ways that we can generate income, like pop-ups or special events or something that we can do that's both COVID friendly for this time. And then we're also thinking towards way down the future, you know, how can we create a consistent revenue stream every single year that is going to both support the program and then also hopefully eventually pay Emily and myself as well.
Yeah, going back to like the dream scenario, right? Having a salary is definitely part of that. I hear you. And I think a lot of the people listening, a lot of our listeners can relate to that because many of them are running their own businesses and they're in food and they understand the grind. So yeah. I appreciate your honesty there because it's tough and especially tough doing it the way that you and Emily have decided to, which is, you know, really thinking a lot about the impact that your business has on community. And it is such an inspiring model for, I think, myself and then other people, others listening to the show. So you have all of these different ways to bring in cash, really, really creative. I want to take a step back and talk about your actual training program because really what you're trying to do is find ways to offset the cost of this program and then of course have some left over. So let's talk about this training program. It sounds like you said it's going to kick off next week with a new cohort of students. So maybe you can tell us more about what that program looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. So that program is a 14-week training program here at our space in Pioneer Square. We will have 4 students for this next program. And those students are going to learn a lot of in-demand skills that are necessary for jobs in the industry. And so when I'm looking to hire someone, or for example, when I worked at Molly Moon's, or if someone was looking to hire a baker or something along those lines, we really wanted to focus on skills that someone who was hiring were going to be able to identify and say, yes, that's something that I need in my business. And so students will learn skills like the creaming method and learning how to make cookies and cakes and buttercream, choux pastry. They'll learn how to make tarts and pies and yeasted breads. So over the course of those 14 weeks, we really focus on those in-demand skills. And then on top of that, something that's so important with hiring someone and having someone who is going to be reliable is really focusing on those soft skills too and making sure that students understand the importance of showing up on time. Professional communication. What does professional communication look like? Really focusing on all of those things that are going to allow someone to be successful in a job. And those things are really hard. Those are the ones, me teaching someone how to make delicious cookies, I can get them there. I am certain with that. What can be really challenging sometimes are those soft skills. And that's something that we'll be continuing to work on.
That is so valuable. That training, like you said, I mean, that's something that you can't just learn through classes or just opening up a cookbook, like those professional skills that will help them get placed in jobs. I mean, that's taking it so far beyond just learning pastry and baking. So I can see how that would be something that restaurants and bakeries and other companies in the Seattle area would be excited to hire from, because I imagine in your role, like you were on the end of hiring too, and you know the challenges that come with trying to find someone to fill a role. And like you said, having them be professional, not just having the technical skills, but also the soft skills and just understanding what it means to, like you said, show up on time. Seems straightforward, but it can be challenging.
Absolutely.
So you've got the training program and like you mentioned earlier, all of these awesome ways that you can bring revenue into the business. And one of them, and this is what I would love to talk about more, is your classes. And so you moved into a physical space fairly recently. That's what Emily and I had talked about when we were first chatting on the phone. And I couldn't help but think, oh my gosh, like you moved into this physical space, I think after COVID had hit initially in the spring. So I'd love to hear what that whole journey, that whole experience was like, because I can only imagine, you know, you had the space in the works, I'm guessing, well before COVID had started in Seattle.
Yeah. So we had started planning it before COVID hit, and we were kind of in the middle of construction during the height of everything and really just trying to move forward and make plans and get everything done. We have been really lucky, we feel like, because of our unique business model and how, you know, we aren't a restaurant and we aren't a bakery, and we've kind of, people know us as not that. And so we have, you know, those goodie box memberships, we have those pastry kit memberships, which we really worked hard on at the beginning of COVID because we knew that we needed to come up with ways that would mean that we would still be earning money in a time where people can't come in and take physical classes with us. And so, yeah, we also started doing online classes, as Heather mentioned, and just kept focusing on building out our space. And we were really lucky also. We worked hard to get grants to help us build our space out. And so we had help with that financially. We did a lot of work in our space. And for doing all of the big improvements that we made to this old historic space, we got a little bit of rent abatement. So we get to not pay rent for a few months, which is really helpful as well. And then on top of that, we have met so many amazing bakers along the way that really needed a space to host their own pop-ups and to just kind of test out their business concepts. And so we came up with a resident program, and we have a few really amazing residents that rent time in our space. And so that's been really helpful as well.
And your space is in one of the, I guess, most central locations in Seattle. It's not kind of tucked away in a suburb, right? Like you're right in the heart of it all, and you have a pretty well-known neighbor too.
Yes. So we are right in the heart of it. We're just south of downtown, and we picked that this particular location because we love the old historic neighborhood, but we also love that it's on pretty much any bus line and transit line. There's a streetcar, there's the light rail, and it's just super accessible. And we knew that we wanted that because we knew that our students would need an easy way to get to class.
Right. And the London Plane is next door, right? Or they're nearby?
Thank you so much. Thank you. Yes, thank you. We appreciate you so much.
That was our neighbor at the London saying happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Are you serious? I was going to edit that out, but I think we're just going to leave it in. So
yeah. We love them. They have been the best supporters and the best neighbors, and we are in their old kitchen space. So they actually loaned us their kitchen space when we did our pilot program last November, and they let us in here every Saturday and gave us space to teach our students and for free. And they were just so supportive of everything that we've done. And we honestly wouldn't, you know, probably be here without them. They've been so amazing.
100%.
So yeah,
that's makes all the difference, especially when you're a team of two, right? And like having that sense of community or just having those people who have your back. I know from my own experience, it means a lot. So that's great that you have them next door. And I love that they just made this appearance on the podcast as we were talking about them. How perfect. And so you created this space. The idea was that you would teach classes in this space. But of course, with COVID, you've had to do this virtual pivot, as with many of the people listening to this show. Our listeners are in the same boat. Many of them have cooking schools. They've taught offline, and now they've had to go into this online world. And some of them have dabbled into corporate and team building. So I'd love to hear from you. What was that experience like? Had you taught online before? Was this just a quick pivot that you had to make? Were you hesitant to make that pivot at all?
So, gosh, I'm trying to think. Before COVID, did I ever do a class online? I don't think so. I think everything I did was in person. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was new and kind of weird. And we were sort of like, well, the pastry project is rooted in education. So that's something that's one of the most important parts of this. Workshops were always going to be a factor. And again, when COVID hit, we were like, well, we can't do this in person for a long time. So we're going to have to figure out how to make online classes work. And so there, because we saw folks doing it in the industry already, other businesses doing it in the industry, we just kind of went for it. And Emily took a couple of classes and kind of saw how it worked. And then again, we just went for it on our own. It's been really fun and interesting, and also kind of awkward sometimes. For me personally, I hope folks who are taking the classes never feel awkward and they're having a great time, because what's happening is most people are muted. And so it's kind of like I'm talking to myself in a room with nobody there, because sometimes I can't even see folks who are a part of the class because maybe they don't have their video showing or something like that. So that's sort of what it feels like. It feels kind of like I'm talking to myself for 2 hours. And so I've definitely had to just become accustomed to that. But doing the classes online has been really fun. It's something that we love and want to continue to grow as much as possible. If we could do a class every single day, we would do it. And we'll be continuing to strive for that as well.
And have you found that the people who are attending your classes online, are they all pretty much based in the Seattle area? Or have you been able to tap into people outside of Seattle, just given the fact that it's virtual?
I think one of the most fun for me classes that we did was actually a class with a Detroit library. And they had reached out to us to see if we'd be interested in doing something. And I was so excited that someone across the country saw what we were doing and were like, you know what would be really fun? If the library did this. And so we definitely have had some folks calling in across the country for classes, but the majority of folks who are reaching out to set up these online classes are people who are in the Seattle area. So kind of the next thing for us is trying to figure out how we can tap into the national market for this.
Yeah, there's such huge opportunity. And even globally, that to me is one of the most exciting things about the online cooking class space. And I totally can understand what you mean by the fact that it's awkward. And I remember the first time I did a demo, and it was more marketing focused, but it was like a webinar sort of thing. And you're talking to a screen and you see the avatars, you see names, but you're not getting any feedback because that's just how the tech was set up. So I do hope that more people, if they have the ability to turn their video on and engage in these cooking classes, do so. Because I think sometimes people forget that there's a real person on the other end, really giving it their all to teach them what they love. So that's my little side PSA around, you know, showing up and really being engaging when you do sign up for a class. Because I've heard it with a lot of the members in my program, Cooking Class Business School. They pour their heart into a class and people just like are on mute, and then they see this like black rectangular tile with their name on it, and they're just like, is anyone there? Am I just talking to no one? So yeah, but as we talk about growing the online classes, it sounds like corporate is a big opportunity that you have in front of you. So I'd love to hear how those corporate classes have started. Has it been, you know, through connections that you've had in the industry at Molly Moons? Like, how have people found you for corporate classes?
Yeah, so our corporate classes so far have really been through word of mouth. And so it's through people we know or people that see us on social media. And then, you know, we've promoted a couple of times on social media that we do these classes, and you can reach out to us to schedule a semi-customizable workshop for your team. And we also experimented with some social media ads for the first time around corporate classes. And yeah, it's really just kind of been that and then word of mouth so far, which has been great. I mean, we've done a good amount of them, and everywhere from Snapchat to Nike to Amazon. So we're just hoping that it keeps growing, and we're thinking of ways to continue to get those kinds of clients for our classes.
Yeah. Yeah. And the benefit of corporate is hopefully the individuals in the class sign up again, or they tell their friends. And so you kind of get a double bonus there, right? Mm-hmm. And selling to one corporate team is a little bit easier than, you know, 25 individual people. So I have to imagine that is something that you want to grow for sure. So speaking of growth and your marketing strategy, what are some of the things that you are working on right now to get the word out around all of the things that you had listed, Heather? I mean, there are so many different ways that people can support you. How do you market all of that?
So right now, we are working hard on social media, and we are also working hard on an online content strategy. So that's something that is in the works for us, and that'll look like videos on Instagram and on YouTube around, you know, pastry tips and tricks and full recipes and some fun series that we're working on together. And yeah, I mean, those are kind of the main ways. We have a newsletter list, so we send out a newsletter to our list of customers and people that have reached out to us, or Goodie Box members or Pastry Kit subscribers, every time we are launching a new product. Yeah, I'm trying to think. Heather, can you think of anything?
Until construction finished a couple of weeks ago, Emily and I were almost 100% consumed with construction. And then once construction was done, we immediately jumped into recruiting for our next student cohort. So we're sort of in this place where there are many areas of opportunity that we'll be looking into for marketing. And like Emily said, like, we definitely have a lot of fans through Instagram that come and support us with Goodie Box memberships and pastry kit subscriptions and such. And there's been some of those social sponsored ads, but we're kind of open to everything, and we'll continue looking to see what kind of opportunities there are.
Yeah. And there's so much. And I think that's something that I know those listening can, they might be nodding their heads like, yes, I get the overwhelm, because there are so many different channels that you could pursue. And it comes down to focus and prioritization. And it honestly made me smile when you said that you have your email newsletter that you send out, because I do think email marketing, while it's not sexy, it is one of the best ways to just show up for your audience on a consistent basis. But the content marketing that you were talking about, Emily, like, that seems really interesting, because I know myself, I get so lost on YouTube looking up anything baking related. And I am not like a crazy baker by any means. I just love watching people frost cakes. It's just so relaxing. And there's this bakery in London, and I'm like such a fan of them. And I don't even know anything about them other than what they teach me in the videos, but it works. Like, I really think the content strategy works. And so I'm excited to see what you come up with, whether it's videos, tutorials. I think that people would love to just see what is going on in your head, Heather, from a culinary perspective, and how you teach all that you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so curious. Which bakery is it? Is it Crumbs and Doilies?
Yes. How'd you know?
I'm not kidding. I was up at like 4 o'clock this morning watching these videos because I couldn't sleep. And I've always loved their videos. And they're just such a good watch.
That is so funny that you knew exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's brilliant. And so for those of you listening who don't know what we're talking about, Crumbs and Doilies, it's a bakery. Is it in London, or am I just making that up?
I believe so.
I think they're in London. The owner has a British accent, so there you go. I'm just going to say London. But she's smart. And so they have a brick and mortar bakery, maybe more than one, I don't know. But she teaches really great videos on different techniques. And she's got like a cool personality too. I don't know, Heather, if she, like, how you feel about it. I think she's cool. She's kind of edgy, a little bit of a like snarky personality, but really fun to watch. Not all like cupcakes and rainbows, which is kind of refreshing, I think, like looking at the world of like a bakery. But yeah, that's exactly it, Heather. I can't believe you guessed.
So funny. Love it.
Yeah. Yeah. But I would love to see the pastry projects take on that. I think like what you could do is just amazing, especially if you like wove in your students and the community piece. And I'm just getting goosebumps thinking about it. I think it could be really, really great. Once again, like back in dream mode. All right. Well, I can't believe our time is ending. I know that you both have a lot to do. It is the day before Thanksgiving, so I'm not going to have this episode go any longer than it needs to be, even though I could talk to you both forever about this stuff. Now, before we sign off, I do want to ask you each a question I ask everyone on the show, and I want each of you to answer separately. So the question is, what's the single most important element of an incredible experience? Emily, you go first. I'm going to put you on the spot.
I think the single most important element of an experience is, I think, like learning something new, maybe. And whether that's like meeting someone new or just learning something you didn't know before, or expanding on a new skill that you're learning. I think that's, yeah, that's what I would say.
And how about you, Heather?
So when you said experience, my mind immediately went to eating. And so I'm going to answer this from an eating mentality. And it's something that I think about a lot. And it is definitely at the core of the most important thing to me when it comes to food. And that is making something or eating something or enjoying something that is the most delicious that it can be, but it doesn't have to be the most beautiful. Like, I just want when people eat our food, it doesn't have to be the most incredibly beautiful thing they've ever seen, the most perfect pastry they've ever seen, but I want them to put it in their mouth and feel like, oh my God, this is the best thing I've ever eaten. And that is totally what I strive for when I am creating new things. So that's what I think about when I think about an amazing experience.
I love that. I love both of your answers. And I think they both make sense given, you know, where you've, you know, your paths individually and what you're working on now. Heather, I can't say I've heard that answer before, but I love it. And sometimes people, you know, are just like, oh, well, you eat with your eyes and like it needs to look pretty to taste good. But you're going counter to that. And I think that is, that's a really refreshing approach to thinking about eating. And I appreciate that answer. So thank you for that.
Of course.
Yes. And of course, thanks to both of you for spending your afternoon chatting with me on the podcast. Now, I know for sure that everyone listening is going to want to check you out. I know that I mentioned your Instagram and all these other places that people should go to learn more about you, but I didn't share any links. So maybe, Emily, can you tell people where they can actually find you on the internet?
Yeah. So our website is thepastryproject.co, C-O. And then our Instagram handle is thepastryproject_. And then I believe our Facebook is thepastryproject.co.
Perfect. And as always, we will be putting all of those links in the show notes. So wherever you're listening to this podcast, head over to the notes, or you can go to theexperientialtable.com and see a write-up of this episode, and we'll have all of the links there. All right, everyone, I hope you found this interview inspiring and eye-opening as you think about different business models that you can pursue in food. Now, let's definitely keep the conversation going. Join me in the Experiential Table private Facebook group, where you'll find other culinary pros and food business owners who are just as excited about topics like what we covered today and so much more. Finally, there is one amazing thing you can do to support this podcast, and that's spread the word. If you could rate and review where you're tuning in, that would be so helpful in getting this podcast out to more people. Thanks for joining. And until next week, get excited to get experiential.